the future. A relentless, desperate wasteland ravaged by nuclear war. With the destruction of the internet and search engines such as Google, accurate information about the past is traded like currency. Two brave travelers are commissioned with the dangerous task of going back through time to gather as much information as they can to find out about the late 20th and early 21st centuries in hopes that a future society may rebuild what was lost and avoid the horror of a smoldering radioactive planet. But there is a catch. The travelers' journey back across eons of time is a one-way trip, leaving them stranded in the past.
Wait, what?
There's no way to communicate their findings to the future other than burying reinforced time capsules in the ground.
Are you serious?
In the hopes that one day recordings such as these will be unearthed to provide a glimpse of the world that once was.
All right.
This is the mission of the crispy coated robots, and it must succeed.
Hey, it's Jim.
Hey, it's Joseph.
So I must be George. Hey, welcome to Crispy Coated Robots 180.
180. Wow.
We've
made it 180.
We can turn back. We can turn all the way back. Tonight, today, this afternoon, this morning, dusk, whenever you're listening to this sad little program, you're in for a treat. Because this is the walking episode.
I'm walking here.
We're going to talk about the actor, the genius of Christopher Walken.
Yes.
And, oh, God.
Wow.
You seem to be great. That's a great impression, George.
Christopher Walken.
Sounds just like him.
You are choked up.
Jim, I was going to say, we cannot do the impression this episode.
Yes,
we can. No Christopher Walken impression.
Well, too bad. Okay, no, sorry. Okay, that was the last part.
So the other topic is Walken songs. It's about
Walken songs.
Not songs about Christopher Walken, but songs with walking in the title or walk.
Some derivative of walk, some sort of use of walk, right, George?
I will tell you, all of mine are walking.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
All of my songs are walking. I actually turned some songs away that just said walk.
Wow. So that's pretty
totally
good, George.
100% walking.
He's bragging. Let's just hope the songs we know them. It could be like from some bands we do not know.
Yeah.
This one is from...
From Pink Crowd Slods.
All right.
Walking the dog.
Let's move over to the Walken movies first. Joseph, what is your number five Christopher Walken movie?
It just so happened, guys, that both my lists, and I swear I did not do this on purpose. I just noticed it whenever it was being developed. I have Christopher Walken from the decades. So I have one from the 70s, 80s, 90s, aughts, and teens. So my first is from 1983. This was a movie channel classic, Jim, Brainstorm. I don't know if you remember this one or not.
I watched it yesterday again.
Wow, Michael Brace. Yeah, I love this one because it was
a Brainstorm.
It was a virtual reality before we understood what virtual reality was.
Wasn't this like Douglas Trumbull who did all the sound effects? I mean, all the special effects for all the movies, and he directed this one, his first directing thing. Yeah, to do all that kind of, I know what you're talking about when they have the headset on and they do all that kind of weird brain computer stuff. Yeah,
exactly. You know, it was a sci-fi thriller. we're going to talk a little bit about this, but Christopher Walken already had the reputation early on his career as playing sort of the guy you were nervous about when he comes into the room.
Yeah.
And later on, he develops a second personality where he's just like, oh, the really charming, nice guy, you know, kind of thing. This one, I felt like he was more of the creepy guy. And I think that's why he was chosen for this role because, George, you just saw it yesterday. I haven't seen it in decades and all that. So tell me a little bit, tell the audience, our listeners, a little bit more about this.
Okay. So the movie doesn't hold up. I mean, it, I already had my list and I said, you know, I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to watch this. I love the idea. The whole idea of these researchers develop a system where they can, by wearing this little helmet or gadget on their head, they can jump into people's minds. They can see and experience what they're seeing, whether that's a memory that's recorded or it's happening live. And the tech is so amazing. Of course, the military moves in to hijack it and take their, you know, for their own purposes. Christopher Walken's character, he's this scientist who, the other person opposite of him is Louise Fletcher from the evil nurse and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes, yeah.
And his estranged wife, Natalie Wood, is in it. And Cliff Roberts, who I love in everything. But they come in, and this was the first role that I ever saw him fully in. And the idea works better than the acting in the script. The script suffers, but there's a moment where somebody puts the helmet on as they're dying, and they record them entering into the afterlife.
It's like a torture device that's being used, right? They use it as a torture.
The military wanted to use it because they could. They have these scenes where they can fly these virtual planes. And it would actually, so you would not actually have soldiers or, you know, aircraftsmen flying planes if they got shot down, because they would be able to fly it from their minds, you know. So that's the premise, which.
So drones before again, drones.
It was before drones. This is 1983. So it's a little weak on that, but the government is bad and they're trying to steal our brainchild, you know. But it's more of an idea than a plot or story, honestly.
It's written by Bruce Joel Rubin. I guess this is kind of his warming up, because he went on to do Ghost in Jacob's Ladder after this. So, I mean, this might have been his warm-up movie. But the movie also, too, even though the great science fiction elements, was definitely overshadowed by the death of Natalie Wood. That happened when the movie was released.
Yeah, you're right.
And they kind of even blame the movie. That's the one that brought, you know, Christopher Walken aboard that boat and all that thing happened, causing maybe some jealousy and leading to her death, allegedly. So that's what, so the movie was definitely overshadowed. Every time I think about the movie, that's the first thing I think about. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that was my number five.
All right, number five for you, George.
My number five, this is the first time I ever saw Christopher Walken on film, and this proves the old adage, there are no small parts, just small actors. This is Dwayne, Diane Keaton's odd brother in Annie Hall.
Yes.
He's only in two scenes, but he gives this speech at the dinner table. He's just kind of got this blank stare, and he talks about, you know, to Woody Allen, you know, sometimes I just want to drive into the other cars coming the opposite way on the freeway. And Woody Allen dismisses him like, oh, okay, well, that's nice. And then the movie keeps going, and then it's like, oh, later on, Dwayne can drive you to the airport. And one of the greatest close-up pullbacks, I don't know the technical term for that, but they have a close-up on Christopher Walken's face, and the camera pulls back, and you see Woody Allen just staring sideways at him, terrified that he's going to, you know, crash into the oncoming traffic. And I love it. But that's the first time I saw Walken on film.
Nice. Yes, so good. You're right. The impression is there. Everyone was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Because he's so good.
So creepy.
That was weird Walken right there.
My number five is a very charming Christopher Walken as novelty shop owner Wilbert Turnblad in 2007's Mayday. Musical of Hairspray, as he's married to John Travolta's Edna Turnblad, you know, and of course the father of Tracy Turnblad, the main focus of the movie Hairspray. So he has a couple, you know, singing and dancing roles here. Also, like I said, very into his family. I actually believe he's in love with John Travolta when they sing their song together in the movie. So very charming turn. This is a song and dance man walking very effectively in Hairspray. All right, let's move on now to the number five walk song. Joseph.
Okay, number five. From 1985. I also have decades on this. I have one song from 1950s to the 1980s. Nope. Yeah. No. Yeah. So my 1980s contribution. No, that's what I was going to do. No, you're wrong. The 1980s contribution is Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves. That's their self-titled album. You know, I guess you would say they're a one-hit wonder, and this is the wonder. So
they had another hit, but nobody remembers it. So yeah.
So there you go, Walking on Sunshine.
That's my number one.
Wow!
Wow! All right,
George,
please add to it if you need to.
It's just, it's so unadulterated joy. Okay. And the time this came out, they performed it on American Bandstand and The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And one thing that's interesting for musicians is they actually had to change the key of the song for the horn section to be able to play the notes, because they were kind of, you know, out of the octave for some of the instruments there. But yeah, just a fun song and just a no-brainer, you know, foot tapper all the way, Walking on Sunshine.
All right, George, what is your number five?
I'm very excited about this. Reached number six on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 in 1975. Walking in Rhythm.
I'm by the Blackbirds. In rhythm.
That's the one.
Moving in style.
Yeah. Not a lot to say about it. I just love this song. It's my number five.
Very quick. My number five, released in 1963 from the album Surfing. I always loved the surf guitar rock, and the Ventures had a song called Walk, Don't Run, which was a big giant hit. I'm not doing it justice, but this is the song. This, along with Pipeline and Wipeout, were the ones that kind of got me into the surf rock. This one more than the others, because this one is actually like a lot harder to play. It's a scale, but there's some stretching on them fingers on this one. But Walk, Don't Run, the surf classic from the Ventures, is my number five.
It's and all about the Mustang Fender guitar.
What was that?
Why do you think they said not to run? I mean, what was up with that?
Probably just maybe slow down, enjoy life. I don't know. There's no lyrics in the song.
Walk, so Don't Run is a poolside rule policy.
Well, that's what I was thinking. It's the lifeguards. Yeah. Hey.
You know, but it also can mean slow down. Hey, enjoy life. Go out and catch a wave. Surf.
Yeah, I think it's those. No, those lifeguards.
You're both wrong. Yeah. Let's move on to number four. Christopher Walken Roll. Joseph.
Okay, so like I said, through the decades, this is probably the most recent one that I have on my list, which is Seven Psychopaths. He plays the character Hans, and this is, you know, we talked about the director, writer, Martin McDonagh, a couple of times on this. He gave us In Bruges. He gave us the latest one that I can't remember now. George, why is it?
Banshees of Inisherin.
Yeah, Inisherin, that's
right.
You're
a banshee, Joseph. You're a banshee.
The little donkey.
The little donkey,
that's
it.
Here's a finger for you, Joseph.
And so, Seven Psychopaths is great because it has Colin Farrell, which is like his go-to guy, obviously, in his movies and all that. But it also has Sam Rockwell, who is a fantastic character actor. And basically, this is a story that is completely absurd, where Colin Farrell plays this screenwriter looking for great plays. And so he takes out an ad saying, hey, you know, to criminals, give me your craziest story. And somehow, through mishaps, gets involved with Walken and Rockwell, who's still a Shih Tzu dog that belongs to an L.A. gangster, Woody Harrelson. And just craziness ensues. It's a great comedy and all that. And this is one where Walken sort of plays the friendly crazy guy, you know, in the film and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a Quaker, exactly. And so it's just a fun movie. I think it's one of those movies that didn't get the attention that it needed, because I thought whenever it came out there, I was like, man, this is really good. Why isn't more people seeing it? So there you go. Seven psychopaths.
George, what is your number four?
My number four Michael Brace from Brainstorm. So I'm done.
All right. My number four from the 2014 movie Jersey Boys. The only Christopher Walken can come off playing a gangster and be the moral compass of the movie with his charming performance as Genovese family mobster Angelo Gip DiCarlo, who really kind of guides Frankie Valli through this kind of crazy music scene. And even when the boys get in trouble, he's the one that kind of helps them through financial troubles. And that ends up being the major plot point in the movie. But in this movie, Walken, like I said, is the kind of the weird father figure. He's a gangster, but he's lovable. And he's the person that kind of keeps the Four Seasons going when they're all about to break up. So his performance in the movie does add a lot of weight to it, because in the film too, a lot of these actors besides Vincent Piazza, which I saw in Boardwalk Empire, were pulled from the Broadway show. So him being in the Clint Eastwood movie definitely does add a lot of weight to the film too. So my number four is Walken in Clint Eastwood's 2014 Jersey Boys. Now to number four, Walk Song. Joseph,
what was that? What was the Jersey Boys about?
Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
Oh, because my fourth entry is Walk Like a Man from the Four Seasons, 1963. The crossover.
Little crossover. Nice. I see what you did there.
Nice. Yeah.
All right. Anything you want to add besides it was a great Howie Mandel movie?
also. Wow, you took it there.
Remember in college, we saw the posters for that, and it kind of never came out. It just went straight to video. Wasn't it like Howie Mandel thought he was a dog, and Christopher Lloyd was his owner, like a rich owner?
Ooh,
I mean, it's probably worse than A Fine Mess, which was really bad, that I actually saw in the theaters, the Howie Mandel there. Anyways, all right.
No, I'm not going to add on to it. Everyone knows this. It's the falsetto voice. You know, Jen and Dean did a version of it that same year. I think that's when, like, people were like, hey, you have a really good song. We're going to record it too. And it's like, wait a minute. You're competing right against us. You know, so but I think their version was in 1963 as well. So, but I'm choosing this one because everyone knows this one.
It was a crazy time, because George and I were trying to do a album from the Temptations to the Supremes, but it was a time when they had their like two of their own hits, and then they just recorded Yesterday and every song that was on the charts before. Like, hey, maybe we can get a hit with the two. That is just nuts.
work for those guys, it'll work for us, and it would. That's the
George,
thing back then.
What is your number four?
So performed by Scottish singer Annie Lennox, recorded on her solo studio album Diva, 1992, Walking on Broken Glass. So this Diva album was her first solo album. Like I said, throughout the 80s, she was with the Eurythmics and Dave Stewart. And in early 1990, they kind of split up to do charitable work and endeavors and things like that. And the same year, her daughter, I think her daughter's name is Lola, was born. And this whole album was done at a studio constructed out of her home so she could spend more time with her daughter. But Walking on Broken Glass, 1992.
Very good. My number four is a 1957 song by rock and roll pioneer Fats Domino, I'm Walking, which has the great sax solo in there by Herbert Hardesty. He went to number one on the R&B sellers chart, bestsellers chart, and in true 50s form, later covered in an episode of Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet by Ricky Nelson, where the song reached number four on the pop chart and 10 on the R&B chart. So he was able to
Money. Yeah. You know who I think of when I hear that?
Richie Cunningham.
I'm walking down the street. I'm talking.
Yeah. Yeah, it was used in Happy Days so much. And sadly, with the Happy Days DVD releases and they had to take it off. Yeah, they had to get, yeah. They didn't get any of that music cleared, so they had to take it off. But if you watch it in reruns, you can still catch the, because they used it a lot. Every time there was like a montage of Richie doing something here. I'm welcome. Here to see. I'm that's it.
Yep.
But no longer just some derivative that kind of thing. But anyways, I'm walking Fats Domino, my number four. On to number three, walking, and then we'll take a little bit of a break. Joseph, what you got?
From the 1990s, Captain Koons from Pulp Fiction. This is one of those that I don't think anyone else could have pulled this part off. I mean, just the lines and the description, everyone knows this scene. It's like one scene in the entire movie filled with a bunch of amazing acting performances. And yet this one just sticks out there because it's Christopher Walken just talking about this absurd story of carrying a father's watch to Bruce Willis's Butch Coolidge character.
With Clutch Cargo in the background, which is exciting.
In the background. That's the Tarantino little reference there. But it's this whole thing of, you know, like his father died in the Vietnam War.
Wait. What did he die of?
Did he get dysentery?
He died of dysentery.
Dysentery. That's right.
Because he's carrying this watch around in places that weren't made for watches.
So there you go. Everyone knows this. So there you go. It is Captain Coons, Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, this is in my honorable mention.
Same here.
And it's as silly as it sounds, it's why Butch has to go back for this watch.
Right.
Because it's not like, oh, this is just a family keepsake memento. These two men carried this pocket watch, or not, it's not a pocket watch, it's a wristwatch, but carry the device in a place that just is awful. So
what, talk about like background story, like what's the motive of the character having to go back? Let's give him this whole background. Story,
he can't just go detailed. Back for his watch. We've got to make
something really special. Watch has had quite a journey.
they're laughing the whole time, him and his writing partner, you know, but
all right. Nice. Number three for you, George.
Well, this one has two names, his real name, Carlo Bartolucci, but he goes by Charlie Barrett in Suicide Kings. So this is a 1997 American crime thriller, black comedy kind of thing. These college kids, they kidnap this respected mafia figure. That's Christopher Walken, Charlie Barrett. Okay. And what's amazing is he's tied and duct taped to a chair, and he starts playing these friends against each other, slowly getting information out of them, and then using this to his advantage, and just takes this perverse pleasure in the way that he can manipulate them against each other. It just demonstrates how much of a presence Walken possesses without even moving from a seated position. The movie's okay, but his performance is mesmerizing. Have you guys seen this, Suicide Kings?
No. Yes.
I have not.
No.
James, Joseph has.
I have.
But he's just wonderful.
Oh, no, that's the whole thing. I think this is where it's the character that I described as you're nervous when he's in the room.
Yeah.
You're nervous when he's in the room. So yeah, definitely.
All right. My number three, another patriarch in the later days of Christopher Walken, Senator Cleary from Wedding Crashers. He is the family patriarch of Rachel McAdams, and Isla Fisher are his daughters. Of course, we have the whole weekend, where they end up inviting the Wedding Crashers, Owen Wilson, of course, Vince Vaughn over. And then we have them trying to impress Walken, who's a secretary for the White House. So he's actually a pretty important person, too. So it's kind of works double for them. But you have some really good scenes with Rachel McAdams and Walken doing his fatherly Walken that I've mentioned so far in Hairspray. and in Jersey Boys. I promise there'll be some psychotic walking coming up. But
yeah, are you going to do the father of Catch Me If You Can? Are you? Is this all Christopher Walken?
You're blowing my list. You're blowing my list. But yeah, this is my number three. It's
Jim has some daddy issues.
Secretary Cleary from Christopher Walken and Wedding Crashers. All right, on now to our intermission. Caitlin presents. Oh, this will be fun. Toy Trains.
These are deafening Lionel trains, I can tell. It's not the cheap stuff.
Toy Trains, everybody, from Caitlin.
Nice.
Thank you, Caitlin.
My friend Kevin Crowe's dad was into trains, and his whole like garage was taken up with all these tracks. He had them, you know, on these paneled boards and stuff like that. I could be a train guy. That was fun. That was like, you know, you think, oh, well, they're just this going around circles and all that.
Joseph's life right here. He's going to be a train guy. Cool.
So a little bit of nostalgia there. So. You know, thanks, Tom.
Next episode, appreciate he's going to be like, sorry, guys, I can't make it. I got to choo-choo.
I got to play with my trains.
You just made Caitlin mad.
Oh, wow. Oh, sorry, Caitlin. Sorry, Caitlin. Thank you, Caitlin.
You think, Tom.
Number three walking song, Joseph, what you got?
This is a personal favorite from 1979. The album, Regatta de Blanc, the group, The Police, Walking on the Moon.
My number two?
Wow.
Yeah. I love this. The thing about this is sort of near and dear to Sting's heart because it was the first song that he heard a stranger sing his lyrics. He went to this office building and he was on the elevator and there was like a worker that was on the elevator that was just sort of humming his lyrics, you know, and Sting was like, it was such a surreal moment to think this total stranger was singing words that I had written. So I like that. It's a great song. It's totally a great song. It's all bass. It's awesome. Walking I know you guys do a version of it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a three note bass riff, you know,
And then just let that chord ring like Andy Summers and you're good to go.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, we love playing this. This was the second number one UK hit for their Police. The first being Message in a Bottle. But yeah, very, very nice. This is my number two. So,
all right, George, you give us your number three and your list is pretty much done, huh?
Not pretty much done.
It is done. Okay. What's your number three?
And this is, I'm going back to 1966, Nancy Sinatra. These boots were made for Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken in parentheses. So Nancy, the daughter of Frank Sinatra, was on the same record label, and they were going to drop her because her first few singles had kind of flopped, but things kind of turned around whenever she teamed up with producer Lee Hazelwood, who wrote this song for her. Or gave it to her, I guess. I think it was originally made for a man, and they tweaked it. But big hit, Nancy Sinatra, These Boots Were Made for Walking.
All right. My number three from 1963, written by Burt Bacharach, lyrics by Hal David. Singer Dionne Warwick took it to number six, the number one on the Cashbox R&B chart, number six on the pop chart. I'm talking about Walk On By, which has been covered a lot too by a bunch of artists. The best one is the Isaac Hayes version, which starts off so weird and creepy and 70s. It's great, but it pops back into it. And that song has been sampled. It's pretty much a staple of a lot of the hip hop songs you hear today, features something by Walk On By with Isaac Hayes's version. But everybody's done it. Aretha Franklin. I mean, this is one of Burt Bacharach's finest hours. Walk On By is my number three walk song. There we go. Now to Christopher Walken, number two, Joseph.
Well, you guys sort of blew my list where you're jabbering there, because my number two is from 2002, Catch Me If You Can.
Hey, it's my number two also.
Yeah, I this movie's great. And this is Walk. I feel like this is his best performance as the endearing dad. He sort of plays this big dreamer that has fallen short, you know, on dreams and all that, has the admiration of his son, completely supports his son with his escapades and all that. And he's just a lovable dad type character and all that. And
he's also, I mean, I Joseph, really, a tragic figure in this thing too, because, you know, with the wife leaving him for the James Brolin character too.
Oh, absolutely.
The way he plays it is so good.
Yeah, you know, because really it's almost like he's a schlub. You know, he's sort of like a guy that just can't catch a break. He has these big dreamers. His wife leaves him because she's like, she sort of recognizes, okay, you're a big talker, almost like a death of a salesman type character, you know, big dreams and all that, never fall through and all that. But Walken does such a great job in it, just adds to the movie. And that's why it's my number two.
Okay. Jim, my number two, same thing. I saw it. I thought his performance was very realistic. You know, I didn't feel like it was the old play more cowbell Christopher Walken. I thought it was a very good human performance. So, and nominated for an Academy Award for it too. So,
yep. There you go.
Number two.
Did
for
I
you,
tell
George?
You guys, I actually met Frank Abagnale, the Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah. I think you told me. I don't know if Joseph knows though.
No. Yeah, when did you meet him?
It's been many years ago. And, I'm going to ruin this movie for you guys. He never talked to his father ever again. So Abagnale, he said that he, as a very young age, went to the court, and the court said, had his mother and father in there. They were getting a divorce. And the judge, he said he never even looked up from writing. The judge never looked up and said, you know, pick who you want to live with, your mother or your father. And he said he couldn't make that decision. And he left the courtroom, and he was in contact with his mother later on, but he never saw his father or spoke to him ever again.
Magic.
I like the movie version more than the reality.
Movie version is better than the real Frank Abagnale.
The real Abigail, which looked nothing like Leonardo DiCaprio, was on Johnny Carson a lot of times, telling these amazing stories, and just wowing the audience on this stuff that he was getting away with, you know. But
oh man, the stories this guy told, it's better than the movie. One thing though, that opening scene where Spielberg filmed that French prison, Spielberg actually went back to that prison, and it looks exactly like it's portrayed in the film. So there are bits that he got 100% right, and then there are some things that it just makes a better story, you know. But
did I tell you that I held some luggage from Catch Me If You Can whenever I went to that warehouse, that studio warehouse?
Yes, yes.
So they're like, yeah, this is a hero prop, meaning that I guess it was a suitcase that either Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio was holding or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. George, you're number two for Walken.
My number two, the fifth film to be adapted from a work of Stephen King, This is Johnny Smith in the Dead Zone from 1983.
It's my number one.
After a car crash leaves him in a coma for 5 or 6 years, Christopher Walken, Johnny, wakes up with psychic powers. And his powers allow, he can't really control them, but he can see this horrific version of the future because Martin Sheen as Greg Stilson is a presidential candidate and going to blow up the world and everything like that. So he's got to figure out how to stop that character, Greg Stilson, from being elected and taking blowing up the world and everything.
Of course, when he touches the great scenes when he touches people's hands and you have that kind of walk, and then you see the future and you see his eyes. It's just so well played. And then even when he tracks down the murderer of all the that whole scene,
the police officer spoiler. Yeah,
and this isn't warm and fuzzy walking too. This is like weird. I've always been weird, and now
creepy.
I have,
this is crazy.
Creepy. And now I have now I can see psychic. And now no one wants to be around.
Ice is gonna break.
That's great. When he tells Tom.
Nice.
When he's trying to tell the kid's father that if they goes out there and plays hockey, it's gonna be a deadly thing. The ice. One more time, George or Tom. The ice is gonna break.
The ice is gonna break.
So good. All right, that makes it in. I'm happy. So my list is pretty much done. Since my number two was Catch Me If You Can, let's go back over to,
you know, I was at a party recently, and it was kind of weird because everybody was just in their own corners and everything until do it, Tom.
The ice is gonna break.
Yeah, we had an icebreaker. There we go. Sorry.
Oh, just awful,
man. Just wow. Awful.
I'm glad he has no more picks on the walk songs. Joseph, what is your number two walk song?
It comes from Johnny Cash, 1956.
Oh, yeah.
And his hot and blue guitar. I'm talking about I Walk the Line. That's right. The great thing about this song, I mean, besides it sort of being like a standard, is the fact that it changes keys. A lot of people, there's a lot of technicality to it that a lot of people don't understand. They just know the song and all that. Like, for instance, he hums in the song. And in one interview, he talked about why he's humming during the song. It's because he's trying to change keys. So he wants to, he's basically like changing the pitch of his voice. And so he hums to get to the correct key of the song in it. There's also that chucking sound that he does with his guitar. He actually used a dollar bill on the neck of his guitar to sort of mute it a little bit with that. So there's a lot of techniques that goes into this song. It's a standard. It's great. Everyone knows it. So that's why it's my number two. I Walk the Line.
All right.
Because my number two
is the second single from the 1975 album Toys in the Attic, Walk This Way by Aerosmith, which was influenced by Mel Brooks. Apparently this song was one of those, you know, we're all musicians, when you jam before a concert, they were just jamming, and Joe Perry was like kind of riffing off the Meters, which were like a funky group from Louisiana. He had this kind of like whole riff, and then Steven Tyler would just come up with these crazy lyrics. So during the recording session they apparently ran out and saw Young Frankenstein. The producer of the track saw Young Frankenstein returning to the studio. He laughed about Marty Feldman and telling Gene Wilder to walk this way and limping. So Douglas,
I don't buy it. Is this real?
Douglas suggested this is the title for the song, but they still need lyrics. So they used Walk This Way as the title, and pretty much Steven Tyler filled in the lyrics. So there you go.
Beautiful
Mel Brooks influenced rock and roll classic. Walk This Way from Aerosmith is my number two.
This is my number one.
Yeah, good stuff. It makes it in. There we go.
So it makes it in, and yeah, everything you say. And you know, let's face it, it had a second life to it, because then Run DMC comes in
Run
the 80s.
DMC.
Yeah.
And you know, that was sort of the big crossover of hip hop and rock, you know, on it.
We wouldn't have Limp Bizkit without that. That's true. Yeah.
All right, so where do we go here? Because we still do we still have number one for Christopher
number
Walken?
One?
Yeah.
Okay, Walken, you two have still have number ones. I'm done because mine was Dead Zone. Joseph, what's your number one?
Okay, this is my 1970s pick. Back in I want to say like 90, gosh, I'm trying to think here. Maybe 2000. I decided that I was going to, in one summer, because I still had my summers off, I was going to watch AFI's top 100 films of all time. And so I just spent a summer. This is when Netflix, and maybe in the 90s when I did this, because this is when Netflix was still just doing DVDs and all that. And I had that membership of three at a time. So literally every day I would watch one of the 100 movies, and I did it in order and stuff like that. And the movie that I had not seen ever, but made the greatest impact, was easily The Deer Hunter. I had never seen the movie before this time, and I had heard about it. I sort of knew about it, but it was one of those things that I watched in the afternoon, and I was thinking about it days later because it was so powerful. And of course, you're talking about the Russian roulette scene, Christopher Walken, who plays one of the three friends that go off to the Vietnam Wars. He Nick. Doesn't come back.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Nick. His name. Nick, this is yes. my number one. Nick. Nick.
Okay, Nick Nicky.
Cheritovich or Cheritovich or something. I don't know.
And yeah, so yeah. It's such an intense scene. Walken is so incredible in it. I felt like it was the role of a lifetime, because I think everything else after this point is because of this film, you know, with it. And George, it's your number one, too. I'm going to let you go ahead and talk a little bit more about it, but so
well,
good.
This is 1978. So I don't have the long thing of, I actually just sought it out to see it. I think on the movie channel, I had seen little snippets over the years. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to sit down and just watch it from start to finish. But 1978, that was the year Hollywood kind of finally started dealing with the conflict of the Vietnam War. Because if you remember, that's the same year they had Coming Home with yeah. Voight, John Voight. This film, these Pennsylvanians, small town Pennsylvanians, go off to the Vietnam War, and then they're forced to play Russian roulette by the Viet Cong. When they're prisoners of war, they come back. Walken and De Niro make it back, but Walken never is really the same, and he goes to these backroom Russian roulette games and everything. Walken won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in it, and it's just, even to I've seen the scene so many times, but it's still. Both while they're in the concentration camp, but the enemy camp, and yeah. in the back room in the parlor, both of those scenes are still just as intense when you know it's just a movie, it's not real, these are actors, it yeah. still gets you every time. So this is definitely going into the future, into the canister today, because it definitely deserves it. But and I'm Tom, I want to thank you for your restraint. He said he's got the sound of the gun queued up.
That's not cool.
Come on.
No,
hey, Tom,
he didn't do it. He said he's not doing it. But
the ice is going to break if yeah. you do that. Okay, so I think you guys are both done with your walking songs.
That's
so
it.
My number yep. one, I am probably going to have number one yet, is a B-side. The A side was a song called Perfect Day, produced by David Bowie and Mick Ronson. So was the B side called Walk yeah. on the Wild Side, produced by David Bowie and Mark Ronson from Lou Reed's second solo album, Transformer. It became his big hit. Later in the 80s, it became a jeans commercial or a scooter commercial. I don't even know which one it is. Yeah. yeah. But this was definitely a slice of life of New York's Andy Warhol-ish time with some transvestites and that whole kind of scene in very graphic detail, because George and I do this song too. There's talks of gashes and there's talks of other, this talks of like, you know, uncomfortable stuff, but it is a,
there's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It is a definite slice of life of what happened in that time when the song was released in 1972. Great bass line played on a stand-up bass. And of course we have the end part too with the doots. But so many great parts. It's got to be my number one, Walk on the Wild Side, Lou Reed, my number one walking song today. So there we go.
I heard a rumor. I've never been able to find out the answer on this, that David Bowie plays the sax. You know, he was a sax player.
Yeah, yeah.
That sax solo, do either of you guys know if that was him or not? There's Bowie rumored that it was him.
Yeah, I do not know that he played the sax. I do know that Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch did a song called Wild Side, and they sampled it back in 1991. Mm. That was their second single. Well, there you single go.
That's after, even better somehow.
It was their second single after Good Vibrations. So that should be a little bit of knowledge that would be, you know,
perfect.
Kind of
perfect.
Good. No, yeah. But the baritone sax was performed by Ronnie Ross, who was David Bowie's teacher.
Maybe that's the connection. Okay. So
Bowie does play acoustic guitar on the track, according
to I heard he did the miming for the song.
Yeah.
He did a lot of the miming. So
yeah. You can hear it. You can hear it come through. Makes a difference. Yeah.
Joseph's in George joke territory right now.
Yeah, well,
you guys go ahead and have that then. So let's go ahead and vote. I guess on walking, well, we both have three for both, right? So let's go.
No, we have four because George didn't highlight Catch Me If You Can.
Ah, that's right. Because you and I did. Sorry. Yeah, that's right.
I was busy trying to spell Abagnale. Sorry about that, guys.
Right, so yeah, let's do walking rolls. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got four of them. And we.
Oh, boy. Man, Elizabeth Wilson writes in this week's episode of We're Sorry, We Suck. It's a recent episode, too.
I did not agree to that title, by the way. So.
Episode 179, Memory Loss Movies and Fast Food Promotion.
That was last week.
She's like on Johnny on the spot, but she's really upset because she writes in, really? How could you guys forget? Okay, I appreciate the pun. How could you guys forget this Mike Nichols directed movie written by J.J. Abrams?
I know
it has Harrison Ford and Annette Bening in it. She's talking about the 1992s regarding Henry. She's right. I mean, this is a great movie. When this movie came out there, it was powerful. It was really heart-wrenching. You're talking about this high-powered, you know, attorney that is somewhat estranged from his family, you know, the success of his life and all that. And then he gets in this
shot. He goes to buy some cigarettes.
He gets shot.
In the theater. It was forgettable.
Oh, Jim, you're wrong.
This made my Harrison Ford roles, whatever episode, that's like episode 40 or something. This made my, best Harrison Ford roles.
Yeah, so I don't think it made my really like Harrison Ford roles. I wasn't a big fan of this one. I thought it was a little too TV movie-ish. I mean, that was
You are not making Elizabeth Wilson happy on this one, Jim.
It was like
because
Robbie
she
Benson
really takes it out
movie.
On me. She goes on to the letter. She's like, I'm really upset with Joseph on this. She calls me out because she says that I gave 1,000 honorable mentions and didn't mention this one.
You did.
She's right. She did sort of catch me on that. So, you know what? I'm going to apologize, Elizabeth. I'm sorry. I suck. Okay. Right.
I'm going to say that this was an oversight because I love this movie. There's a scene where Harrison Ford, he can't tie his shoes because of the injury he sustained. And his little girl, his daughter, ties it. And he's like, where did you learn to do that? And she just looks at him from you. And it just breaks your heart.
I'm glad you guys
except
like
if you don't have a heart like Jim, then don't worry about it.
This was done by Robbie Benson in Death Be Not Proud, a ABC TV movie back in the day when he had like brain aneurysm. So, I mean, this is J.J. Abrams just watched that stuff.
The ice is gonna break. Right.
Let's move on now to honorable mentions for Christopher Walken. I have Wayne's World 2, Annie Hall, and Pulp Fiction. For my walk songs, I have a bunch actually. Walk Away, Renee is a great song by the Left Bank in the 60s. Walk a Life by Dire Straits. I did have George's Walking on Broken Glass by Annie Lennox. Jesus Walks by Kanye West. And of course, the greatest walking song of all time, used in telethons, You'll Never Walk Alone. Various artists, including Jerry Lewis, at the end of the telethon every single year, walk hard. You'll never walk alone. It was funny, too, because there was a guy in a Jerry Lewis show that was doing an impersonation of him, and he came up on stage and said, Jerry said, come do me. So he started singing You'll Never Walk Alone, and it sounded just like him. He's like, no, we're not doing that. We're not making fun of the telethon. No, you can do anything else, but not make fun of the telethon.
Oh, jeez.
Even his key on that was just key of H.
Key of H.
Never walk alone. Do you guys have any honorable mentions?
I've got Walkin' Man, 1974 by James Taylor. Walkin' on the Sun. That's when
Smash Mouth.
When Christopher Walken was an astronaut, Walkin' on the Sun from 1997. And then, not because I like the song, but I like the idea, Walking on Thin Ice, a song by Yoko Ono. It's John Lennon's last recording of guitar. Wow. It's on that track, recorded December 4th, 1980, 4 days before he was shot. So his last final creative act on tape, and it actually charted. It got to number 58 in the U.S. and kind of started getting into clubs and stuff like that. So Walking on Thin Ice,
the ice is gonna break.
Yeah, and it thank you, Tom, and it did, I guess.
George, Joseph, any honorable mentions?
So for the Walken films, Blast from the Past. This is a quirky little movie, but it's a fun dad movie type for Walken. I really sort of enjoyed his character in that. His charm was equal to the movie's charm, I thought. It was just sort of light and fluffy. Yeah. Two walk songs that are honorable mentions. It has to be mentioned. I know you guys are gonna give me crap about Walk Like an Egyptian. I'm just throwing it out there. Because it was a thing at one time. But the other one is this workout pump up song that if you're not like in an aggravated mood, then Pantera's Walk will do that to you instantly. Are y'all familiar with this song?
No.
Walk. Yeah. I'm telling you right now, go to your Spotify's, go to whatever you use and stuff like that. Punch in Pantera's Walk. You'll hear it, you'll recognize it because it is a recognizable song, but it's just like, boy, you're just ready to fight after this song. I don't know psychologically what it does, but it just gets you in that mood. Like, don't mess with me. So there you go. Those are my honorable mentions.
My walking roles, Captain Coons from Pulp Fiction, like we talked about, the Horseman in Sleepy Hollow. That's kind of a weird.
Yeah, that is a weird role.
Weird role. And then Emperor Shaddam IV in Dune Part 2. So,
oh, wow. I thought you were going to say in Ping Pong. Wow. I thought you were going to say Balls of Fury, the ping pong that he was in.
Yeah, we call it Ping Pong. Yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah. That one was good.
Well, you said the Emperor because he was in that whole kind of Oriental garb in the movie, too.
Same costume, probably. Yeah. That's his leisure wear. Yeah. All right, so let's start with Christopher Walken roles, since we've got four of those. What we know makes the canister: Dr. Michael Brace from Brainstorm, Johnny Smith from The Dead Zone, Nick in The Deer Hunter, and Frank Abagnale Sr. from Catch Me If You Can. What we have to choose from is Dwayne, the odd brother in Annie Hall, Charlie Barrett in Suicide Kings, his role is the father in Hairspray, Seven Psychopaths, where he's Hans the Quaker, Jersey Boys, he's Angelo, Captain Coons, Pulp Fiction, Senator Cleary, and Wedding Crashers. What do you think, guys?
It's tough.
I'm letting you guys decide. I got three of them in, and I think all the other ones are really good. You know, it's so hard to say.
I think we need I think we need comedy because we've got him as a leading man in Brainstorm and the suspense of the Dead Zone, supporting actor in both Catch Me as You Can or Catch Me If You Can.
We don't have a musical one. I mean, Hairspray, he sings and dances, and he, you know, he started out as a dancer in Pennies from Heaven. And then of course the video with I think Fatboy Slim or one of those.
Good.
So
well, let's do it. Let's put it. Let's put
Hairspray. I'm good with that.
Cool.
What's the name of the character there, Jim?
He is Mr. Turnblatt. He is Wilbur. Wilbur. The role was played by Jerry Stiller in the John Waters original, and Jerry Stiller ends up playing Mr. Pinky, the shop owner in the the musical. So, but
all right. So, Catch Me If You Can, Hairspray, Deer Hunter, Dead Zone, Brainstorm. What a diverse mix there. That's really, that's crazy. Walking songs. We have Walking on the Moon, 1979 from The Police, Walking on Sunshine, Katrina and the Waves, Walk This Way by Aerosmith. So those are the three that are definitely going to the future. And then we have Walking in Rhythm is up as a contender from the Blackbirds, Walking on Broken Glass, Annie Lennox, These Boots Were Made for Walking, Nancy Sinatra, Walk, Don't Run, The Ventures. I don't know why I put The Venture. Hang on, let me fix that.
The Venture.
The Venture. Walk Like a Man.
We just got to clarify, it's the song, not the movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. By the Four Seasons.
Yeah, I'm falling down here. Four Seasons.
I'm walking.
Fats Domino. Walk On By, Dionne Warwick.
Just a little tidbit, Isaac Hayes' version of Walk On By is number 300 on the greatest songs of all time, Rolling Stone. Just thought I'd put that.
All right. Thank you for that. Nobody cares. I Walk the Line, Johnny Cash. Walk on the Wild Side, Lou Reed.
We have at least four giant classics that we have to choose from, so that's going to be hard.
So walking,
I like
rhythm.
The I'm walking just because I like I'm walking just because of Happy Days. You're right. I mean, that was see, like every
hey guys,
scene.
Let's see what Fonzie's doing. I'm walking here to see. I'm walking.
Okay.
Let's go over to Arnold's. I'm walking here to see. I'm walking. All right. One more.
Rock, pop, the kind of the new old, wave, the rock and roll. We got
and
some
super
rock
pop
there
with Katrina.
Yeah.
Nancy Sinatra's not a bad choice. The Bacharach, I'm partial to that. Lou Reed, though, that's kind of like the start of like really alternative music. So I'll let you guys decide.
I could do Lou Reed.
Let's do Lou Reed then. Let's do Lou Reed.
I love that song. Two chords. Yeah. All right. So there we go. Walking on the Moon, Walking on Sunshine, I'm Walking, Walk This Way, Walk on the Wild Side, and the Color Girls sing.
Doop, doop, doop.
They sing, you'll never walk alone.
Pathetic.
Walk hard. It's hour 23.
That's right.
Jerry, we've made it.
Yeah, the tie's already off. The tie is like hanging down from the right side.
Bleary red eyes. You know,
I remember walking in here and that's like, oh, it's that guy.
I always hated the telethon because school was the next day.
That was the next day.
Like
the end of summer right there. That's right. Yeah. It's true. All right. And then let's see here. All right. JustBecauseRobots.com is where you need to go for all of our merch, our shows, our album reviews. And I believe now it's time for the official ceremony. We shoot this up and then get the shovels and bury it in the ground. So there we go. George, I want to go ahead and end the show with maybe the Break the Ice thing, or I could sing Jerry Lewis again. So just go ahead.
Remember, there's always tomorrow. Or is there?
Because you'll never walk alone.
For now, the ice is gonna break.
I'm not saying you better. It's gonna break.